Truth Seeker, welcome to the Malloy program here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for joining in. It got even more bizarre today. This is just an absolute three-ring circus. I don't think it's ever going to stop. After seriously thinking through my position from last night, just let the whole damn thing burn, I've come to a conclusion that was the right thing to think. Let it burn. Let the whole damn thing collapse. What's the worst that can happen? Who's going to be hurt? There will be a brief period of economic uncertainty in the country, but we will survive. We survived worse than this before. But why prop up these roaches, these thieves, liars, sneaks, cheats? Huh? We have sound for you tonight from the hearing today in front of the Senate Finance Committee. That either will interest you or put you to sleep. Maybe both. Maybe to do both. Hey, before we get into serious issues, did you catch any of Sarah Palin's speed dating today? Did you see that? First Kissinger, and then, I don't know, the guy from Uribe, the guy from Colombia, and then who else? Hamid Karzai from Afghanistan. She was just... Sandy in Portland writes, Mike, watching Sarah Palin's round robin meet and greets with international leaders today remind me of speed dating, where potential daters move from table to table every 6 or 8 minutes at the ring of a bell. At the end of those few minutes of idle chit-chat, the two people shake hands, move on to the next. At the end of the evening, each person gives the others a thumbs up or thumbs down, and the host of the event reviews the scorecard to see if there are any mutual matches. I hope Mrs. Palin met her dreamboat, and that Alaska's first dude and subpoena dodger, Mr. Palin, isn't too upset. What an effing joke, just like everything else. Take care, Sandy in Portland. Yeah, I caught a little bit some of the photo ops. My favorite part was when, after the initial photos with no sound were taken, and then the McCain Gestapo ordered everybody out of the room. Okay, get out, get out. Got an email here from a Nigerian. It's one of those letters, one of those emails. Y'all have seen these before. We have $500,000 in secret funds. People have died. Send $340. Well, this one, I don't know. It says, Dear American, your urgent help needed. I need to ask you to support an urgent secret business relationship with a transfer of funds of great magnitude. I am Ministry of the Treasury of the Republic of America. My country has had crisis that has caused the need for large transfer of funds of $800 billion U.S. If you would assist me in this transfer, it would be most profitable to you. I am working with Mr. Phil Graham, lobbyist for UBS, who will be my replacement as Ministry of the Treasury in January. As a senator, you may know him as the leader of the American banking deregulation movement of the 1990s. This transaction is 100% safe. This is a matter of great urgency. We need a blank check. We need the funds as quickly as possible. We cannot directly transfer these funds in the names of our close friends because we are constantly under surveillance. My family lawyer advised me that I should look for a reliable and trustworthy person who will act as a next of kin so the funds can be transferred. Please reply with all your bank account, IRA, and college fund account numbers and those of your children and grandchildren to this address, wallstreetbailout@treasury.gov, so that we may transfer your commission for this transaction. After I receive that information, I will respond with detailed information about safeguards that will be used to protect the funds. Yours faithfully, Ministry Minister of Treasury, Paulson. Now, of course, that comes from Spencer at angrybear.blogspot.com. I just about fell out when I saw this today. Like, oh, my God. I get it. We have a couple of interesting emails tonight that I want to share with you. They're from people who are really facing this head on. We also have a little bit from George Will, one of the icons of the conservative movement, who pretty much says that McCain is out of his mind. The headline of George Will's column today in the Washington Post is McCain loses his head. This is from Tara in Howell, Michigan. She writes, "Hi, Mike. I listen to you daily via podcast. I just want you to know I feel sane knowing I'm not alone. I'm a mother of two boys, 6 and 9, a wife, and I own a small production plant in Michigan, incorporated in 1987. We were making strides before the Bush crime family took over. We now struggle daily to stay in business. I struggle most as I talk to people who 90% of the time seem to have no clue what is happening, though I know they feel in their heart of hearts that things have gone completely amok. I'm not complaining. I am just sad. I know what potential we have as a compassionate people, but greed and fear have completely taken over. What I worry about most is that it may be too late to turn back. I find it difficult to discuss with my wonderful husband because I know he has to go out day after day to chase the buck, and he too feels this high level of frustration, not knowing what's coming next. I guess my reason for writing is to make sure you know you have people out here who count on hearing your voice of reason." What? Okay. "I know most might laugh at that because of the ranting, but I truly love what you bring to the table. Thank you, Tara in Hall, Michigan." Well, thank you, Tara. I should have read the whole thing through. It was very kind of you to say that. The frustration that you feel in Howell, Michigan, is exactly what we feel here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. There's not a day that goes by that Kathy and I just don't kind of, at some point during the day, although we try to avoid this completely, until about 4:30 in the afternoon when, you know, we really start cranking towards the program. But there's not a day that goes by that we don't just kind of look at each other and wonder, what in the hell is happening and has happened. So I know what you mean, Tara. It's from Alex. Alex writes, "You hear a lot lately about small business owners. Well, here's a report from a small business owner in the flesh. I'm getting absolutely nothing done today because I stopped for a few minutes this morning thinking about 9/11, what really happened, and how it's still happening around us. It's so difficult to turn around and put a capitalism hat on. I don't think I'll do that today. No, as a matter of fact, I'm going to pick my daughter up from school in a few hours, and soon after, I'm going to crack open a beer or two. I'm going to crank up a particularly insightful record. Then it's all about smoke and mirrors. So much smoke and mirrors around today, I'll one-up the bastards. I will have a smoke, find one of their mirrors, and smash the goddamn thing. Maybe someone will notice. It only takes a spark to keep it lit. We don't always agree, but brothers and sisters don't always, do they? I'm confident we can work out the details someday, but in the meantime, we've got your back out here in California." Alex, P.S., "I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth." Yeah. The tone of the emails has changed dramatically here at the Molloy program. We're looking through the spam folder and other places where we have emails, trying to find a couple of, you know, the really vile hate emails that we put on Molloy's Uncensored Mailbag video segment for the Founders Club members. And I've noticed that there is a shortage of these things. And I think the reason is the crazies, the real crazies out there, the religious freaks, the hardcore right-wingers, the neo-Nazis, the ones who just thought that George Bush could do no wrong and that John McCain and Sarah Palin are saviors of the world, are starting to realize what the Republicans have done to us since 1980. this long, slow process of destroying regulation, destroying oversight, undermining everything, just turning the country into some kind of a corporate socialist state. Not socialist in the good sense, but socialist in the sense of, you know, privatizing profit and socializing loss, you know? I think people are starting to realize just where we are.
He has been told to say it clear, to say it cool. It's over. It ain't going any further. And now the wheels of heaven stop. You feel the devil's riding crop. Get ready for the future. It is murder.
Your host for A Pian's Friant's Future, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. If you think about calling in tonight, I hope you do, but wait a while, because we have quite a bit on the table here. George Will, writing in the Washington Post today, this is fairly astonishing. Not because Will is telling the truth. I don't think George Will is a liar in the classic sense of the word. I really don't. He happens to have a political philosophy that I pretty much think is, you know, half crazy. But I'm not surprised to see this. I happened to watch this week with Judas Stephanopoulos on Sunday. I think I even commented on it. Cokie Roberts was on, and George Will, and you know, the old crew. What's his name? Sam Donaldson. And the consensus was that McCain, this is the consensus I took away from it, not what they were saying necessarily, but that McCain was just crazy and had no more business running for president than, oh, I don't know, pick somebody. Sarah Palin, you know. And I found that interesting because the whole crew was there. The old ABC Sunday morning crew was there, and they were of one mind. Well, here we are 2 days later, and George Will quotes. He starts out by quoting Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. This quote: "The Queen had only one way of settling all difficulties, great or small. Off with his head," she said, without even looking around. And then Will writes, "Under the pressure of the financial crisis, one presidential candidate is behaving like a flustered rookie playing in a league too high. It is not Barack Obama." Will goes on to say, channeling his inner Queen of Hearts, John McCain, furiously and apparently without even looking around at facts, said Chris Cox, chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, should be decapitated. This childish reflex provoked the Wall Street Journal to editorialize that McCain, untethered, disconnected from knowledge, disconnected from principle, had made a false and deeply unfair attack on Cox that was, quote, unpresidential, close quote, and demonstrated that McCain, quote, doesn't understand what's happening on Wall Street any better than Barack Obama does, end quote. Got to get that little Barack Obama slam in there. Will goes on to say McCain's smear of Cox is a harbinger of a McCain presidency. For McCain, politics is always operatic, pitting people who agree with him against those who are, quote, corrupt or, quote, betray the public's trust. Two categories that seem to be exhaustive. There are no other people to McCain. Further into his column, Will, as a matter of fact, at the end, Will says, "It is arguable that McCain, because of his boiling moralism and bottomless reservoir of certitudes, is not suited to the presidency. Can a dismaying temperament be fixed?" It is significant. I mentioned the other night, I think last night, that Charles Krauthammer and several of these right-wing editorial writers have, or op-ed writers, have come to the conclusion that McCain is not a choice on any party ticket. It's not because he's a Republican or not a Republican or a centrist or a reformer, whatever the hell he is. I don't think he's any of that stuff. I think he's a wacko. And some of these people apparently agree, but they are better educated and have more dignity than I and would not use the word wacko, whereas I will use it. I'll also say son of a bitch, and I can't see George Will calling John McCain a son of a bitch, but I think he is. But what is significant to me is that some of these pillars of the right-wing editorializing establishment are starting to go on the record about their not just doubts about John McCain, but their absolute certainty that this guy is absolutely not the person. Now, they don't even mention Palin because Palin is so far off the chart as to render the whole McCain journey here just an absolute acid trip. I mean, this is just, it's insanity from the word go. I mean, look at these two, huh? Look at these two. Aside from my ad hominem attacks against McCain, we will have this evening some information for you that has been out there in mainstream media for the past couple 3 days about McCain and his involvement with the very people. Now, his deep involvement, his financial involvement, his sucking up to, his embrace of the very people now that he claims are detrimental to the U.S. economy, people that he would replace instantly. I'm a great reformer. Let's run against Washington. This is what the Republicans are doing. You could see this on the during the committee hearings today, the Senate Finance Committee. Was it Finance Committee, Gabby, or Banking Committee? Finance. You could see it during the hearings today. The Republicans are trying to position themselves as people who are going to run against Washington. And, of course, Washington has been dominated by these rat bastards since 1994. But Republicans being Republicans and Democrats being the wimps that they are, Republicans will pull this off. They will convince a certain number of Americans that it wasn't the Republicans that did this. It was some thing that looks like Republicans.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small, and the ones that mother gives you don't do anything at all. Go ask Alice.
Bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malone.
Twenty-six before the hour. I don't know if you were listening online. If you caught that, it's just across the AP wire about an hour ago. The FBI is investigating four major U.S. financial institutions whose collapse helped trigger a $700 billion bailout plan by the Bush administration. Two law enforcement officials said late today the FBI is looking at potential fraud by mortgage finance giants Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Lehman Brothers, and AIG. Oh, boy. The inquiries, according to the Associated Press, still in preliminary stages, will focus on the financial institutions and the individuals that ran them, a senior law enforcement official said. Official said the new inquiries brings the number of corporate lenders under investigation over the last year to 26. Spokesman for AIG, Fannie Mae, and Freddie Mac did not immediately return calls for comment Tuesday evening. A Lehman spokesman did not have an immediate comment. The law enforcement officials spoke on condition of anonymity because the investigations are ongoing and are in the very early stages. Blah, 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 blah. All the more reason to tell Henry Paulson to go pound sand up his ass. $700 billion, a trillion. If these devils in the Democratic Party, in the House or the Senate, go along with this, I don't know. Yeah, you know, another empty threat from your humble and obedient servant here. I don't know what to say anymore. Just pay close attention if they do. So, investigation into the possible fraud. Oh, really? Fraud? No. You're kidding. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, AIG, Lehman Brothers? Huh? Fraud? How would that be? My, what could they have done? Something you may want to know, the Republican Party platform, the 2008 Republican Party platform that was adopted earlier this month, they have a section on rebuilding home ownership. The line in here, it's not that long, it's a couple of paragraphs, but the line in here that I find interesting is this, quote, "We do not support government bailouts of private institutions. Government interference in the markets exacerbates problems in the marketplace and causes the free market to take longer to correct itself," end quote. Okay. Well, if the Democrats don't support it, Republicans don't support it, good. Let the son of a bitches work themselves out of the hole they dug. I'm talking about these financial institutions. Now, I realize what I'm saying there, because enough of you who understand this to a far greater degree than I do have written to me, emailed me, and put some facts on the table that would have taken me forever to try to research on my own. And I understand that refusing to bail out whatever needs to be bailed out right now is really kind of playing with fire. But on the other hand, we've been through this before, and we'll only go through it again. If there is a collapse coming, let's get it over with. I think the American people can survive. I think we can handle this. If we can't, if it totally reduces us to second status on the global stage, that might not be a bad thing. It really might not. This country has gone nuts for the past 30 or 40 years. I mean, really nuts in getting involved in wars of opportunity, the internal affairs of other countries, mass slaughter, overthrowing other governments, sticking our noses and our weaponry and our soldiers where they had no business going. It might be a good time to just pull back and assess where we are and what we've done. And if that means a collapse of the financial industry, remember, the financial industry has nothing to do. I realize the counter argument to this, believe me, but it has nothing to do with the actual production of stuff or the growing of things or the harvesting of anything. And I know the counter argument, Malloy, you're crazy. It's the financial services industry that provides money for loans, for startups, for this, for that. Oh, yeah? Really? Well, how did we do it before all of this madness? Huh? How did we do it then? So I hear the counter argument, but I say bat's not. It doesn't mean anything. It really, really doesn't. I think most of us can point to members of our own families. I can certainly point to my grandfather. Members of our own families who had nothing, who built a something and maybe lost it. My grandfather built to the point where he had enormous net worth for the times in 1927, 28, and then lost everything in 1929. Everything. They survived the Depression. My grandparents and my mother and her brothers and sisters. And then after the collapse, he built it again. So it can be done. And he did this without, you know, government-sponsored loans. I'm not trying to come across here like some pull-yourself-up-by-your-bootstrap conservative, because I'm not. I think everybody needs assistance. We all, you know, we need to. I'm a communitarian, if nothing else. But the financial services industry is not something that is healthy for the country. In fact, it's not healthy for the globe. We all know this. The World Bank, all of these neoliberal financial institutions that are just absolutely destroying everything on the planet for the sake of the free flow of capital. This is insane. It really, truly is insane, because we are seeing the only result, the only conclusion that unrestricted capital flow produces. It doesn't produce things grown or things made or houses built or families in good financial shape. It simply does not. The free flow of capital, unrestricted, unmonitored, unregulated, is destructive. Totally, completely, it has been historically. There have been books written about this that you and I will never even see the titles to, much less read. But you and I have common sense, and we understand this. Unrestricted capitalism, unrestricted capital flow, is dangerous to your health, to the health of the planet, to everything. And again, the proof, as Grandma used to say, is in the eating. Take a look. What the hell do you see? This didn't, you know, a lot of these bastards in the Senate are absolutely right on this junk-ass committee today, asking these inane, half-witted questions of these three blind mice sitting at the table. This stuff didn't start happening last year or 6 years ago or with the Bush crime family or the end of regulatory oversight during the Clinton years or the destruction of the savings and loans during Bush 1 or the deregulation of markets, the initial stages of that during Reagan. No, it's been going on for 40, 50 years. This has been the ultimate goal of these right-wing neo-fascists. Destroy it. Slam it up against the wall. Break it. Ruin it. Kill it. Murder it. Suck it dry. Why? Because they're bad people? No, because they're Republicans. Because they're capitalists. This is what happens. Jesus, God, it is so simple. There's no way to avoid. There is one way to avoid this. Extreme regulation, high taxes on corporations. We've had it pounded into our heads that corporations have to operate without paying anything into the system that benefits them. Look at these goddamn oil companies. Why don't the oil companies bail out the financial services industry? That would be a nice swap, wouldn't it? Huh? They can certainly afford it. And they're destroying the planet, and they're predatory sons of bitches of the highest order, the oil companies. But take a look. Look at the destruction. Unregulated, unmonitored, unrestricted, capital flow. It's like a river of fire. It circles the globe over and over, just burning and destroying anything it touches, except for the people who actually control the river of fire. And now Henry Paulson sits there with the Buddha, Chris Cox, and this freakish Bernanke. They sit there today telling the Senate Finance Committee that they want a complete blank check. Are you out of your goddamn minds? This is what they're asking for. This is the hubris of these people. And when you look at the plan, we talked about this last night, no oversight. No second guessing. Congress is dead. Supreme Court is dead. Everything is dead except Secretary of Treasury, who works for and within the executive branch, which is controlled by corporate America. Hello. And these senators are even considering this? Kate writes, you want to know what I think? Well, I'm going to tell you anyway. I think these neocon men have been selling the same packages of mortgages to multiple buyers, say the Chinese and Japanese and or the Saudis, thinking that by the time the deals began to stink, when the jig was up on this Ponzi scheme, we the people could be stampeded into turning over the rest of the treasury to them. I think things fell apart sooner than they thought they would. And worse than they thought they would. And now they're in a panic on Wall Street. And the chimp and Dick Vader are rubbing their hands with glee. Take cover, Kate. Who made me judge and jury hear it? We'll be right back.
not an economist. But if I were, I'd probably say there's a 50% chance it would happen sooner and a 50% chance it wouldn't.
Ten before the hour, we will play the sound from today's hearing when we come back. I wanted to touch on this yesterday. It came out late in the New York Times last night. John McCain's campaign manager was paid more than $30,000 a month for 5 years as president of an advocacy group set up by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to defend them against stricter regulations. You understand that? $30,000 a month, McCain's campaign manager was paid to hide the fraud that was going on at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, McCain has recently begun campaigning as a critic of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And the army of lobbyists that helped these two mortgage giants evade greater regulation when they began taking these riskier mortgages with implied federal backing. David Kirkpatrick and Charles Duhigg, writing The Times, says, but last week the McCain campaign stepped up a running battle of guilt by association when it began broadcasting commercials trying to link Obama directly to the government bailout of the mortgage giants this month by charging that he takes advice from Fannie Mae's former chief executive, Franklin Raines, an assertion that both Mr. Raines and the Obama campaign dispute. Incensed by those advertisements, several current and former executives of the companies came forward to discuss the role that Rick Davis, McCain's campaign manager and longtime advisor, actually did play in helping Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac beat back regulatory challenges when he, Rick Davis, served as president of their advocacy group called the Homeowners Alliance, formed in the summer of 2000. Some of those who came forward were Democrats, but Republicans, speaking on the condition of anonymity, confirmed the descriptions. This McCain son of a bitch needs to crawl back into a hole someplace and lay down quietly and wait for the next waterboarding team to come in. This guy has obviously lost his marbles. Now, as far as Paulson is concerned, this is from Think Progress. They talk about, Paulson seeking this unfettered authority that he wants. He wants to have more power than the twit in the White House. He wants to have more power than Cheney. McClatchy Newspapers yesterday had a question, can you trust a Wall Street veteran with a Wall Street bailout? Referring to Paulson, who is the former CEO of Goldman Sachs. A report out now says Goldman Sachs would be among the biggest beneficiaries of Paulson's proposed $700 billion, $1.2 trillion bailout. This is what McClatchy writes, but the conflicts are visible. Paulson has surrounded himself with former Goldman executives as he tries to navigate the domino-like collapse of several parts of the global financial market. And others have gone off to lead companies that could be among those that receive a bailout. In late July, Paulson tapped Ken Wilson, one of Goldman Sachs' most senior executives, to join him as an advisor on what to do about problems in the U.S. and the global banking sector. Oh, God damn! I mean, don't you just want to start breaking things? Goldman Sachs cashed in under Paulson. In 2005, they made $5.6 billion with these crappy-ass subprime loans and thievery and hedge funds and all the crap that they get involved in that produces nothing, does nothing, except generate money that you and I have to cover when it all goes bust. Paulson made $38 million that year. The 2005 annual report shows that Goldman Sachs was still a significant player in issuing mortgage bonds. The conflict of interest is increasingly clear today as Bloomberg.com reports that Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated and Morgan Stanley may be among the biggest beneficiaries of Paulson's bailout plan. How? According to Bloomberg, Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated and Morgan Stanley may be among the biggest beneficiaries of the $700 billion U.S. plan to buy assets from financial companies, while many banks see limited aid, according to Bank of America Corporation. Quote, its benefits, Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley, in its current form, will be largely limited to investment banks and other banks that have aggressively written down the value of their holdings and have already recognized the attendant capital impairment. That's according to Jeffrey Rosenberg, Bank of America's head of credit strategy research. Anyway, we'll post this tonight before we call it a night here. The point is, Paulson sits there today with that hangdog trademark look of his, with the Buddha sitting over there, Christopher Cox, and the freak sitting in the middle, Bernanke, telling these senators nothing but lie after lie after lie. It's that old, they pat you on one hand, pat you on the back with one hand and pick your pocket with the other. That's what Paulson is doing there today. And telling these people, using the same tactics used by the Bush crime family where it concerned war in Iraq, the same exact tactics. If you don't do this now, the whole goddamn thing is going to fall apart. Oh, my God, we'll be eating the family pet. Your children will die. The sky is falling. Give me $700 billion now. No oversight. Don't think about it. Give me the check. Sign it. Leave it blank. I'm kidding about $700 billion. It's going to be everything I can gouge out of you dumb bastards. Well, you know what, Truth Seeker? I'm tired of being a dumb bastard. I'm tired of having dumb bastards represent me in D.C. You know what I'm saying? I really, truly am. How about you? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour, so the FBI is checking out 4 of these predatory bastards for fraud. Oh, gee. McCain has on his payroll people who were on the payroll of these companies to protect them from any investigations whatsoever or regulation. And now McCain is out there reading and saying to people, my friends, Barack Obama is right in the middle of this, my friends. All right, look, let's move on. Let's move from the irrational to the totally insane. The hearings today before the Senate Banking and Finance Committee on that $1 or $2 trillion bailout that Paulson is seeking for his friends in the financial services industry, which is nothing but a collection of super whores, no offense to honest sex workers. This is from Paulson's opening remarks. Here's the part where he vaguely suggests the problems began with Clinton. And then proudly boasts about the great success of U.S. bailout of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, again blaming previous politicians for these disasters.
The events leading us here began many years ago, starting with bad lending practices by banks and financial institutions and by borrowers taking out mortgages they couldn't afford. We've seen the results on homeowners. Higher foreclosure rates affecting individuals and neighborhoods. and now we're seeing the impact on financial institutions. These loans have created a chain reaction, and last week's our credit markets froze. I will also say to the comments made about Freddie and Fannie and the bazooka, you all can be darn glad you gave us the bazooka, because we needed it. Let me tell you something. The root of that problem was in congressional charters, started many, many years ago. We were living up to our obligations here. There were ambiguities. There were obligations around those charters. And what we did was we came in, we stabilized the market, mortgage rates went down so that capital could flow through our system. And I can just say, I, for one, and I know that the other witnesses feel very glad about this, thank goodness that was done and they were stabilized before we had some investment banks report their earnings. Or let me tell you, this would be a much more serious situation than it is today.
Oh, shut up. Okay, it's a stretch for me to say he tries to blame on Clinton. He shifts it back years ago. But, you know, if this guy would stop passing the buck, what took him so long to act on the mortgage crisis? Why didn't the Bush crime family do any regulating to prevent this or suggest it to Congress? Well, you know the answer to that as well as I do. Now Paulson warns of the dire consequences to America and the global economy if Congress doesn't give him this blank check for $1 trillion to buy whatever companies he decides with our great-grandchildren's tax dollars. That is, of course, unless we default on the loans from China and they call in their chits, then our grandchildren all had better start learning various Chinese dialects.
The market turmoil we are experiencing today poses great risk to U.S. taxpayers. When the financial system doesn't work as it should, Americans' personal savings and the abilities of consumers and businesses to finance spending, investment, and job creation are threatened.
We don't have savings.
Ultimate taxpayer protection will be the market stability provided as we remove the troubled assets from our financial system.
They're not assets.
Don't forget that. If this system has to
They're liabilities.
And that will be the ultimate market protection. I am convinced that this bold approach will cost American families far less than the alternative. A continuing series of financial institution failures and frozen credit markets unable to fund everyday needs and economic expansion. Again, I'm frustrated. The taxpayer is on the hook. The taxpayer is already on the hook. The taxpayer already is going to suffer the consequences if things don't work the way they should work. And so the best protection for the taxpayer and the first protection for the taxpayer is to have this work.
So this is the only solution, huh, Hank? Give you $1 trillion and pray that somebody wants to buy pieces of these failed companies somewhere down the road from the government at a price of maybe whatever could it be. And I wish these bastards would start referring to these as assets. Whatever it is they're talking about, they're not assets. If they were assets, they wouldn't be for sale. Not like this. These are liabilities of the most severe sort. Senator John Tester, he's a Democrat, right? Then asked the panel, the three freaks sitting there, the question that has all Americans scratching their heads or some part of their anatomy, why this action right now? Why does Paulson need $1 trillion this week or else we face total economic collapse? Well, the Fed chairman, the very weird-looking Ben Bernanke, took his lollipop out of his mouth, and he answered the question.
10 years ago, I got involved in politics because of electrical deregulation in the state of Montana. It was a total disaster. I've got plenty of questions to ask about the plan, and I will as they come forth. But I guess my concern is this. 6 months ago, we heard about Bear Stearns, and then we've had Fannie and Freddie, and we've had some other ones come down the pipe. A week ago...
Now, this, of course, is Senator Tester. I didn't want you to think this is Bernanke. Bernanke comes up next.
You came forth with a $700 billion bailout plan. $700 billion, and it was made clear that this was going to be, there was going to be nothing added onto it. Accountability, demanding of re-regulation was not going to be accounted. And my question, and this is the concern I have, you guys are a lot smarter in financials than I am. I'm a dirt farmer. You guys have been in the business, former chairman of Goldman Sachs. Why do we have 1 week to determine $700 billion that has to be appropriated or this country's financial systems go down the pipes? Wasn't there some opportunity sometime down the line where we could have been informed of how serious this crisis was so we could take some preventative steps before this got to this point?
The financial markets are in quite fragile condition, and I think absent a plan, they will certainly get worse. But even at their current state, they are not serving the necessary function to support the economy. Credit is not being provided. Secretary Paulson mentioned non-financial companies are not able to finance themselves overnight. Credit is just not going to be available. It's going to also affect savers because of the value of their assets that they have. So even in the current condition, even if things don't get severely worse, but I think they would get worse without some kind of action, this will be a major drag on the U.S. economy and will greatly impede the ability of the economy to recover in a healthy way.
You notice he didn't answer the question. It was a lengthy question. But towards the end of the question, Senator Tester said, I'm a dirt farmer. You guys are in the business. Why do we have 1 week to determine $700 billion that has to be appropriated or this country's financial systems go down the pipes? Did you hear an answer to that question? Of course not. Now, right after the break coming up here, we'll hear from Republican Richard Shelby, Democrat Tim Johnson, and Democrat Charles Schumer. And then finally, returning to Paulson's open remarks for a second to close it off. We'll have some more tomorrow night, I would imagine. But what I want you to hear after you hear the rest of these sound bites is it's kind of a Uncle Mike's story corner for tonight. It's almost like Uncle Mike's assassination corner, because what I'm going to share with you in Uncle Mike's story corner, I think you're going to find very, very, very interesting. Just remember the name Elliot Spitzer. We'll be back after the break.
Conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. I had to really draw on whatever patience I had left, or I have left, to listen to these senators today questioning the three blind mice that were sitting in front of them, because the questions were very parochial, very stupid, very half-witted, and very asinine, because they were very narrow in their focus. Like, Shelby wants to know, Senator Shelby, whom you're going to hear now, wants to know how to make sure homeowners can stay in their homes. Somebody ought to tell Senator Shelby, because he is a dumb bastard, he is an Alabama senator, which automatically defines him as a dumb bastard. The fact that he's a Republican, he used to be a Democrat. Of course, he switched over from being a Democrat when the niggers got their civil rights. I can't stand that, you know. But what Shelby should be asking, except for the fact that he's an idiot, are questions about the overarching reality of a failed financial system in this country. It's gone. It doesn't exist anymore. Got an email here from BJ who says Alan Meltzer was on the NewsHour on PBS with Krugman and Paul Solomon. Now, do you know who Meltzer is? He's an economist and professor of political economy at Carnegie Mellon University. He's also the author. He's the go-to guy on monetary policy in the Federal Reserve Bank. He's written books about him. He's considered one of the country, if not the world's foremost experts on the development and application of monetary policy. He was on the NewsHour tonight with Paul Krugman and Paul Solomon. Meltzer said, do not give money to Wall Street as proposed by Paulson and the Bush administration. Meltzer said, let the Japanese who have money buy out, not bail out, these failures. Yeah. BJ goes on here, but that's enough. When you have, see, Richard Shelby, this guy with a mouthful of cow dung from Alabama who sits there and tries to talk to Henry Paulson as if Shelby gives a good goddamn about any of this stuff. All he cares about is whether or not he's going to be able to get reelected, you know. Well, let me just flip it to Shelby. He asked what was the worst case scenario under the Paulson $1 trillion plan. Paulson, of course, doesn't have an answer. So Shelby asked then what it would take to make sure homeowners were able to stay in their homes. Again, Paulson has no assurances other than his stock answer of, well, it's bad now, and the problem's been growing a long time, so it's going to get worse if we don't borrow $1 trillion, wave the magic wand, stabilize the markets.
What if it doesn't work? You know, you assume it will work, but you can't assure us that you know it's going to work because you thought some of the other plans would work.
Let me say this with all due respect, Senator. I believe that the Freddie and Fannie worked the way it was supposed to work. We stabilized that. And in terms of the other actions, I would very respectfully submit if the Federal Reserve hadn't stepped in on AIG, we would have been facing a major calamity. So again, I don't think any of this problem has been growing for a long time. But to get to your question about this plan working, it gets to the root cause, housing.
Is it due to the homeowner who's losing their home? And thank you,
well,
God for you.
I would say, regrettably, there's not every homeowner that's going to save their home. As you well know, even in normal times, in good times, there are many foreclosures. There are some people that can't afford to stay in their home, but there's a huge effort being made so that everyone that can afford to stay in the home and want to stay in the home stays in the home. But what this plan will do is make financing available.
Oh. Really? Financing available for whom? Senator Tim Johnson, Democrat, South Dakota, is up next. As soon as we come back from this ad, from this break, he wants to know why we want to reward the crooked financial organizations, the sons of bitches who have caused this, the predatory lending thugs, the Bush supporters. The neo-fascist, the Republicans, in other words, the ones who sit in New York and Washington and continue to rip off this country while our half-witted supporters, you know, voting Republicans, continue to send these people back to office, right? We'll come back with Tim Johnson. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. All right, back to this this display of bipartisan idiocy today. These senators actually sitting there asking the same questions over and over again. And I have to say, for once, the Republican senators did not sound stupider or more ignorant than the Democrats, except for Shelby. Shelby talks like he's got a mouthful of Mississippi mud anyway. But this time it's Tim Johnson's turn. He asks why we want to reward the bad actors, the crooked financial organizations, the thugs, the mafia, all these pigs, by bailing them out. Instead of punishing them. You know, they all talk about the free market, right? Isn't that Bush? The free market? Let the free market deal with these sons of bitches. Why are we coming to the rescue? And when enough people suffer because of what they've done, maybe we'll get off our asses and deliver to them what the French delivered around the year 1790 to the ruling class. You think? Paulson said, oh, there's no time to punish them. Just got to, you know, keep allowing these bastards to continue to do what they're doing, to collect multi-million dollar salaries, even as this nation's grocery clerks and school teachers are bailing them out.
There's a lot of things that need to be done. And in terms of the compensation issue, there's a lot of things that need to be done there. But I would respectfully submit that we can't do those as quickly as it takes to get this system up and running, because that's what you care about. You care about the constituents in your state, the average people, and Americans in terms of what the impact is going to be on them. And unfortunately, and it may make you angry, it makes me angry, when you ask about the taxpayers being on the hook, guess what? They're already on the hook. Okay, they got put on the hook by the system we have, the system we all let happen, the system that Congress, the administration, future administrations let exist, and so if this system is not stabilized, they're going to bear the costs.
Who's going to bear the cost? We already are. You rat bastard. Now it's...
I just can't understand this guy's logic. I watched a lot of the hearings today, and what I heard from Paulson and all these other robber barons, basically it came down to, well, everything sucks already. The taxpayers are already suffering, so what's another $1 trillion? Just give it to us. What's the worst thing that can happen? We'll just see what we can do.
Yeah, well, that's... sounds
it's bad now.
Sounds like the run-up to the Iraq War. Charles Schumer, Democrat in New York, is next. He wanted to know, what was so magical about this $700 billion figure and why it's needed right now, in full? Huh? Why couldn't they take a little less now, a little more over time, if the bailout plan was working and it was restoring market confidence, then take a little more later? You know, a little here, just like when you go to the bank and you want a loan to start a business, you need $50,000 and they give you $10,000 to start. And, okay, let's see what you can do. Okay, you showed us. Here's another 20. Okay, let's see what you can do. Paulson said he needed this horrendous amount now to, you know, make an impact on the market. And in fact, the $700 billion is the minimum amount needed to restore confidence in the markets. But he has no data to back up that ridiculous guess. These criminals they don't want to take a chance that the next president won't allow them to totally bankrupt the U.S. economy. Which is the right wing? Which is the Republican the plan? Remember, this goes back, Paulson says, several years. Yeah, it goes back to the 30s, to the 1930s, when you son of a bitches decided that the New Deal was not something you wanted. It was too egalitarian. You couldn't live your crazed Gilded Age lifestyle any longer. This is a long clip, but we want you to hear the whole exchange because Paulson is basically telling us, give us a trillion now. We can't take it in bits over time. We can't tell you why it won't work, why that won't work, but it won't work. But unless you want people losing their jobs and houses, you got to give us this full amount now to save the economy.
As you can see, there are a lot of questions about whether this would work. We understand you've done your best, you think this would work best, but it's clearly we're in uncharted waters. What about doing this in tranches? Why couldn't you ask us for $150 billion and on January 15th or January 20th, we would come back, we'd assess how this worked and grant some more money if it's really working. Maybe, you know, the markets will have stabilized and you actually will have made money. Why ask for the full $700 billion? I never thought I'd think that $150 billion is a low sum of money, but compared to $700 billion, it is. And I think it would make people sit not easily, but at least a little easier.
I'll give you my answer, Senator. I think you got at it when you said, and when we come back in January, because what we need to do is we need to stabilize the system, and we need to, this is on market, based on market, we need market confidence, and we need the tools to work with. Now, of course, we plan to do this in tranches. And again, as a number of people have said, this is not an expenditure. I know that this doesn't fit into your outlay system in Congress. The taxpayer is on the hook.
Yes,
but
yes,
again, it's purchasing assets. They'll be held. They'll be resold. Money will come back in. Come back in. But to your basic question, we think we need the full authority for that size to do the job and stabilize the markets.
Could you live with less?
That does not mean that it's going to be invested, be spent between now and January.
Could you live with less? I think people would feel better if we did this and we could come back and reassess it. As I said, it's uncharted water, so I'm not asking you to support it now. But again, could the system work if we put in the legislation, say, this is the first tranche, and by January 15th, say, just pick a date, Congress will come back and reexamine?
I think that would be a grave mistake.
And why?
Because I think what this is about market confidence and having the tools to do the job.
Well,
we're going to do this in tranches, but I'm wondering when Congress is gone and if we need this, what it is we do. And so, again,
well, the President, if there's an emergency of any type, if this doesn't work over the next 2 months and the cataclysm that Chairman Bernanke has talked about, you're going to have to call us back into session if you need some other type of authority. I have to tell you, I'd ask you to think about this. I know ideally you'd like to just have as much as possible, but you're not going to use $700 billion in these 3 months. It's a huge sum of money, even $150 billion, and the confidence of the markets will be determined by how well it works initially, not by how much money you have in your pocket next to your bazooka.
Well, I would say, with all due respect, Senator, you're going to have to decide. The two of us have made the recommendation of what is required. What we're playing with here is very important. And again, give us the tools we need to make this work.
Give us the tools we need. We only need one tool, Senator Schumer, just a big-ass bag of money. And if you can't do that, a blank check, okay? Now, Schumer asked, his line of questioning was very sensible. Why do you need it now? Why don't we do this in installment, or tranches, I guess they call it? Why don't you get $150 billion now? Get $200 billion now? Huh? Come back later. Let's see how it works. No, no, no. Did you notice that Paulson did not have an answer? Well, we want market stability. We have to make a big show. We have to come up with the $700 billion all at once so that the thieves, con artists, liars, snakes, and sons of bitches who have done this to us won't all run. We want them to stick around because they may be thieves, liars, snakes, and sons of bitches, but they are our thieves, liars, snakes, and sons of bitches, and we have to take care of them. Finally, returning to Paulson's opening remarks for a second, Paulson explained why he never once, ever, not for a second, enacted any regulations or oversight measures over the out-of-control mortgage and banking industries because he thought it would be presumptuous of him to make these suggestions to Congress. Please. He just wanted to keep lining the pockets of the Bush crime family and their cronies.
When we all met Thursday night, as you'll recall, Chairman, with the leaders of Congress, you all said to us, don't give us a fait accompli. Come in and work with us. We gave you a simple three-page legislative outline, and I thought it would have been presumptuous for us on that outline to come up with an oversight mechanism. That's the role of Congress. That's something we're going to work on together. So if any of you felt that I didn't believe that we needed oversight. I believe we need oversight. We need oversight. We need protection. We need transparency. I want it. We all want it. And we need to do that in a way that lets this system, let this program work effectively, quickly, because it needs to work effectively and quickly, and it needs to get the job done.
Well, there you go. Did you hear anything? I realize we did not have all 5 hours of testimony here. But in the various times during the day that I checked into C-SPAN and then C-SPAN 2 to listen to this garbage, I tried to hear something that was a concrete cause, effect, and solution. That's all I'm looking for. What caused this? What is the actual effect on so-called Main Street, and what's the solution? Not once did I hear any of that. All I see is this rancid little bastard sitting there demanding $1 trillion. Or if he doesn't get it, the sky is going to fall.
They say don't step off the sidewalk and don't cross over the line. But we'll serve time at night when the lights begin to dim.
Too short to listen to Right Wing Radio. It's more of Mike Malloy.
Too what? 9 before the hour. All right, you remember Elliot Spitzer, the guy who was the former governor of New York State, who was politically assassinated shortly after he accurately wrote about an upcoming financial disaster in the February 14th, 2008 Washington Post. The title was Predatory Lending, Lenders, Partner in Crime. I want you to hear this. And you tell me if you think he was taken out politically by the Bush crime family. This is what he wrote. Several years ago, state attorneys general and others involved in consumer protection began to notice a marked increase in a range of predatory lending practices by mortgage lenders. Some were misrepresenting the terms of loans, making loans without regard to consumers' ability to repay, making loans with deceptive teaser rates that later ballooned astronomically, packing loans with undisclosed charges and fees, or even paying illegal kickbacks. These and other practices, we noticed, were having a devastating effect on homebuyers. In addition, the widespread nature of these practices, if left unchecked, threatened our financial markets. Even though predatory lending was becoming a national problem, the Bush administration looked the other way and did nothing to protect American homeowners. In fact, the government chose instead to align itself with the banks that were victimizing consumers. Predatory lending was widely understood to present a looming national crisis. This threat was so clear that as New York Attorney General, I joined with colleagues in the other 49 states in attempting to fill the void left by the federal government. Individually and together, state attorneys general of both parties brought litigation or entered into settlements with many subprime lenders that were engaged in predatory lending practices. Several state legislatures, including New York's, enacted laws aimed at curbing such practices. What did the Bush administration do in response? Did it reverse course and decide to take action to halt this burgeoning scourge? As Americans are now painfully aware, with hundreds of thousands of homeowners facing foreclosure and our markets reeling, the answer is a resounding no. Not only did the Bush administration do nothing to protect consumers, it embarked on an aggressive and unprecedented campaign to prevent states from protecting their residents from the very problems to which the federal government was turning a blind eye. Let me explain. The administration accomplished this feat through an obscure federal agency called the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, OCC. The OCC has been in existence since the Civil War. Its mission is to ensure the fiscal soundness of national banks. For 140 years, the OCC examined the books of national banks to make sure they were balanced, an important but uncontroversial function. But a few years ago, for the first time in its history, the OCC was used as a tool against consumers. In 2003, during the height of the predatory lending crisis, the OCC invoked a clause from the 1863 National Bank Act to issue formal opinions preempting all state predatory lending laws, thereby rendering them inoperative. The OCC also promulgated new rules that prevented states from enforcing any of their own consumer protection laws against national banks. The federal government's actions were so egregious and so unprecedented that all 50 state attorneys general and all 50 state banking superintendents actively fought the new rules. But the unanimous opposition of the 50 states did not deter or even slow the Bush administration in its goal of protecting the banks. In fact, when my office opened an investigation of possible discrimination in mortgage lending by a number of banks, the OCC filed a federal lawsuit to stop the investigation. Throughout our battles with the OCC and the banks, the mantra of the banks and their defenders was that efforts to curb predatory lending would deny access to credit to the very consumers the states were trying to protect. But the curbs we sought on predatory and unfair lending would have in no way jeopardized access to the legitimate credit market for appropriately priced loans. Instead, they would have stopped the scourge of predatory lending practices that have resulted in countless thousands of consumers losing their homes and put our economy in a precarious position. When history tells the story of the subprime lending crisis and recounts its devastating effects on the lives of so many innocent homeowners, the Bush administration will not be judged favorably. The tale is still unfolding, but when the dust settles, it will be judged as a willing accomplice to the lenders who went to any lengths in their quest for profits. So willing, in fact, that it used the power of the federal government in an unprecedented assault on state legislatures, as well as on state attorneys general and anyone else on the side of consumers. Eliot Spitzer, governor of New York. What happened 3 weeks later? It was revealed that Eliot Spitzer consorted with whores. And he was gone. Thanks to Mike from Connecticut for the story. He pointed out item by item how the Bush administration was overseeing this financial catastrophe. item by item. It was a roadmap to last week's meltdown. And now this pig, Paulson, acting on behalf of the Bush crime family, wants $1 trillion. I have something to say to him, but I just can't say it on the radio. But it boils down to go have a weird sexual experience with yourself. We'll be right back. Mentioned earlier tonight, the lipstick pig woman had her speed dating event in New York today. You know, hanging out, man, at the United Nations, talking to this one and that one, and Henry Kissinger. I saw a little bit of video of Kissinger and the lipstick pig woman, and I swear to God, once again, when she got up to leave, Kissinger was trying to look up her dress. What a pig he is. You know, a mass murderer. I wonder how Palin felt sitting next to a mass killer. She probably didn't know who he was. What do you do now? What is it you do now? Anyway, while she was doing her speed dating thing, McCain has been all over the country trying to sound presidential, and he's coming across like a complete ass. He's made a series of verbal gaffes or... you know, that's the polite way of saying you don't know what the hell he's talking about. And anyway, what he's saying is undercutting his campaign claim that he's the candidate who's ready to safeguard the nation's economy. Just like George Will, you know, Auntie George, the leading right-wing pundit at the Washington Post, is... way off the reservation now, talking about how McCain, frankly, is out of his head. Is that what he said? Yeah, out of his head. According to Jennifer Parker, writing at where's this from? Is this ABC News? Yeah. The verbal stumbles may have wider ramifications for the Republican presidential pick by reminding voters of earlier flubs and calling into question other aspects of his candidacy, including his foreign policy experience. But he spent 5.5 years in a prison camp. What foreign policy experience? Oh, well. The most damaging gaffe came last week when McCain said, quote, "The fundamentals of our economy, my friends, are strong," end quote, which was a hard sell because it occurred the same day that Lehman Brothers and Merrill Lynch were collapsing. What a dumbass. He went on to make several other slips in the following days. On Thursday, he said he would fire Securities and Exchange Commission Chairman Chris Cox. However, what he doesn't understand, apparently, is the president nominates and the Senate confirms the SEC chair. He is the commissioner of an independent regulatory commission, and he can't be removed by the president. He can't be fired. So, trying to recover the next day, McCain confused the SEC, Security and Exchange Commission, with the FEC, the Federal Election Commission. He said, quote, "I believe that the chairman of the FEC should resign and leave office and be replaced." Now, he said that during a speech to the Green Bay Chamber of Commerce And immediately that went up on YouTube. What a dumb bastard. And on the day before the Federal Reserve System bailed out AIG with an $85 billion loan, McCain insisted that taxpayer money should not be used to bail out AIG with an $85 billion loan. The next day, he said it was appropriate to protect the millions of Americans who have insurance policies and accounts at AIG and therefore should be bailed out with an $85 billion loan. And, you know, his image is a candidate who understands the economic problems of regular voters. He was asked last month how many houses he owned. And then after stammering and stemming and sticking his finger up his nose, McCain said he'd have to ask his staff. He'd have to ask his staff. I mean, this just doesn't stop. It doesn't stop. The verbal missteps, according to ABC, have also drawn attention to McCain's age. ABC News' Sam Donaldson said last Sunday on This Week with Judah Stephanopoulos, quote, "The question is, who in this crisis looked more presidential, calm, and unflustered? It wasn't John McCain." Donaldson added, "His talking points have gotten all mixed up, and I think the question of age is back on the table." Boom, 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 boom. 72 is not that old. It's not the age factor. It's the fact that McCain is a doddering freak. He's a jerk. He couldn't find his ass with both hands. He's an obstructionist. He's a reactionary. He's a flip-flopper. He helped set this mess up. Every single thing he has ever done in the Senate was to destabilize the financial markets. McCain was part of the Keating Five, for Christ's sake, who tried to lobby regulatory agencies on behalf of Charles Keating and the big savings and loan scandal in Arizona. That John McCain.
He's older than Band-Aids.
72 is not that old.
Ballpoint pens, talking pictures, penicillin.
Analysts say McCain is at a disadvantage where it concerns the economy. Who is this? Stephen Hess, presidential scholar at the Brookings Institute, said no matter how far he tries to run away from it, he still represents the party in power that voters blame for this crisis. Hess added, and he has established a reputation of being strong on international affairs and national security, and made it clear that the economy is not his strong suit. International affairs, John McCain? National security, John McCain? He's a goddamn Republican. It was Republicans who had control when we were bombed by 15 Saudis, which gave us reason to attack Iraq. Oh, God. Oh, well. Foreign policy, huh? Traveling in the Middle East in March to highlight his foreign policy experience, McCain mangled which militant Islamic group was getting training in Iraq or Iran. Lieberman had to whisper in his ear. During an interview with ABC's Diane Sawyer on Good Morning America in July, McCain bungled his geography when he referred to the Islamic militants fighting along the Iraq-Afghanistan border. McCain has repeatedly referred to Czechoslovakia, a country that ceased to exist 15 years ago. And while discussing Darfur, a region in southern Sudan, McCain said in June, "How can we bring pressure, my friends, on the government of Somalia?" And his advisor said, Sudan, Sudan. Last year, McCain referred to Vladimir Putin as the president of Germany. Jesus, God. Oh, well. And, you know, there are people out there, probably several million, who are going to vote for this moron, which is a clear indication of the current state of sanity in this country, don't you think? Man. Poway Skip wrote in, "Don't forget the tech bubble. Mike, there was the S&L problem in the 80s caused by deregulation to allow the selling of junk bonds by banks and S&Ls. That cost about $1 trillion. The tech bubble of 2000-2001 where, were due to deregulation, deregulating internet startups who were allowed to be sold on the major exchanges and pumped up by phony sales by the major stock exchange. That cost about $1 trillion, most of it from our 401ks. And now this, just another scam. We got some more here. I'll tell you what, let's start thinking about some phone calls. All right. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. So if you would like to weigh in on what we've been talking about tonight, all right, we will wait for your call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Oh, man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were. Oh, man, look at my life. I'm a lot like you were. Oh man, look at my life. 24 and there's so much more. Live alone in a paradise that makes me think of two. Love lost such a cost. Give me things that don't get lost, like a coin that won't get tossed, rolling home to you.
Right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Yeah, that's easy for you to say. Yep, 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 bop, yep, boop. Okay, last thing here I want to share with you. This is very quick. Norman Solomon, one of my favorite writers, has a very quick little piece here on the economy titled Too Big to Fail, Too Small to Matter. He writes, these times provide a crash course on the corporate state. If a company like AIG is too big to fail, the government will rescue it. Mere people, too small to matter, are expendable. The insurance industry is too big to fail. A person's health is too small to matter. So when it fails due to the absence or loopholes of insurance coverage, that's tough luck. The Defense Department is too big to fail. The people it's killing in Iraq and Afghanistan are too small to matter. The U.S. nuclear arsenal is too big to fail. The nuclear nonproliferation treaty undermined by Washington is too small to matter. Overall, the warfare state is too big to fail. The virtues of peace are too small to matter. Agribusiness is too big to fail. Family farmers are too dirt small to matter. The leverage for the U.S. Treasury to subsidize Wall Street is too big to fail. The leverage to subsidize mothers and children kicked off welfare is too small to matter. The political momentum for bailing out corporate America is too big to fail. The political momentum for funding adequate payment rates for Medicaid to reimburse health care providers is too small to matter. The oil conglomerates are too big to fail. Global warming is too small to matter. The prison industry is too big to fail. The need for preschool is too small to matter. Corporate power is too big to fail. The ordeals of working people and want-to-be working people are too small to matter. Human worth is maximized by dollars, too big to fail. Human worth is affirmed by humanistic values, too small to matter. The current odds of pumping at least several hundred billion taxpayer dollars into corporate America, too big to fail. The current odds of launching a massive federal jobs program, too small to matter. Such priorities and mindsets are in overdrive at the intersection of Pennsylvania Avenue and Wall Street, but a basic shift in government priorities is possible. That's what happened three quarters of a century ago when a progressive upsurge prevented the reelection of President Herbert Hoover and then effectively mobilized to pressure the new occupant of the White House. After campaigning in 1932 as a middle-of-the-road Democratic platform, Franklin Roosevelt went on to become a president who denounced what he called the economic royalists and made common cause with working people and the unemployed. People across the country organized for social change. In the process, you might say, the power of progressive movements became too big to fail. Something like that could happen again. Yeah, well, we can hope. All right, to your phone calls, and then we have a break. And then back to your phone calls. Linda is calling from Pennsylvania, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Linda.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I've been waiting a while.
Yes, you have.
I read that, too. I read that article, and I even responded. And I have an idea for citizens on this.
Okay.
A movement or a response to the $700 bailout, which is horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I personally have many bills and credit card balances and mortgages and small business loan and insurances and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I thought I should tally that up, and I need a bailout myself. And for me, I thought it would be, I mean, if I don't end up giving away my business, it would be $300,000 to bail me out. And I think I'm going to call my representative and my senator and Obama's campaign people and tell them I need at least a $300 bailout, and I want it now, and I want it all.
$300,000?
$300,000. I think that would do it for me.
Well, but Linda, like me, and I've learned this many times in my radio career, like me, you're too small to matter.
I know. But all of us together, call those people, figure out what we need, and call it in.
Yeah.
You know?
Been there, done that, got the T-shirt, trust me.
I know.
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea. Only 300... only 300.
I don't need to be greedy.
Yeah.
I just need what I need.
Well, I think
to get
we,
out of it, and so I can not have to worry about all this anymore.
If we all got in line around the Treasury building in D.C., a long line of people with our little lists on notebook paper.
Yeah.
With everything written down about
right.
what we need.
Yep.
And wait our turn, and then present it to Henry Paulson or whoever. That might be a good idea. Hey, Linda, I got to leave there. Thanks a lot. I appreciate you checking in. All right. Take
Bye,
care.
Bye, thanks.
Bye-bye. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. This is Nova M Radio.
Load of those things ain't been the same. Sick of blues walking up town.
Here's your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Have you been to prosecutegeorgebush.com yet tonight? Check them out, prosecutegeorgebush.com. Back to your phone calls. Brad is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Brad, welcome to the program.
What's up, Mike? How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Stressed as usual from the politics. Anyway, My one point, I just want to make a quick point here, what you have to say about it. So Barack Obama started using the word Main Street, like, versus Wall Street.
Uh-huh.
And then today, McCain used the word Main Street. And immediately, like, that word just became, that phrase became so dirty. Like, first of all, he stole it.
Mm-hmm.
And he takes it like it's his own word.
Right.
And it just, it immediately, you know, when Barack said it, you kind of, it's one of those fancy Barack Obama, you know, phrases. He's very eloquent, and, you know, you take it seriously or you take it with a grain of salt. But then with McCain, like, he just made it dirty.
Yeah, everything McCain touches, just as far as I'm concerned, turns to ashes or, I don't know, something broken or something with cobwebs or spider webs on it.
But to at least 40% of our society, it turns to gold.
Say it again?
To 40% of our society or whatever Republicans are going to vote for them, it turns to gold.
Well, yeah, but maybe this time, if he does manage to steal the election, if the Republicans manage to steal the election, at least normal people like, say, you and I will have the little bit of Schadenfreude to watch people burn in their own body fat because of McCain policies. On the other hand, maybe enough Republicans have, and I realize I'm sounding like a madman here, but maybe enough Republicans have come out of the ether and have realized that the best thing they could do this year is keep their bony asses at home, don't vote, just stay home and read your Bibles.
Yeah, they're probably going to get out and vote, but yeah, let's hope so.
All right. Thanks for checking in, Brad.
All right. Take care, Mike.
All right. You too. Alan is calling from Miami, listening on WINZ. Hey, Alan.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, listening to all this stuff that you said. Listen to this Paulson thing on your show tonight. It's just been wonderful. I got this idea in my mind as you were describing him standing there asking for this enormous amount of money to the American people and not being able to say why or why he needs it all at once. And the only thing that could come to my mind is this kind of scenario that, you know, somebody is backing this whole thing and said, look, you promised us long ago if this thing fell through, the American public was going to come in. Now you put up or shut up. You get all that money or X, Y, Z is going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And just imagine a scenario like that. So you get it. You know, they can't tell anybody why, but they've been threatened that they have to get it all at once or some kind of consequences. Sound familiar?
Yeah, of course. Sure. Of course.
I mean, why else would... I mean, I can't imagine any other scenario why they would talk like that and not be able to answer any questions and have to take all the rules and say, we'll make all the decisions, we'll hire the people, we'll fix it, and you can't really have any oversight. The courts can't have any... I mean, this is blood money. I would love to know that story. I mean, but who is it that's, you know...
Oh, I don't think it's that. I think it's just, look, when you hit on a workable formula, in other words, you go to the House and the Senate and the American people and you say, listen, son of a bitch, this Saddam Hussein crazy man, he's got weapons of mass destruction, he's got gallons, oceans, tankers full of anthrax, he's got nuclear bombs, he's going to come and kill us, we need to make war, we need money, we need to make war. Okay, and the American public and the Congress hear that on the one hand. On the other hand, they hear people like Scott Ritter and the weapons inspectors put in there by the United Nations saying, wait, there's nothing here. Wait.
And they don't hear those people.
And the American public, because we are a collection of absolute dumbasses, Alan, we say, oh, okay, let's have a war. Okay.
Well, right. So who's going to bring up the
But wait a minute. When that formula works,
you do it again.
And it did work, well, do it again. And that's what's going on now. If we don't get Paulson his $1 trillion, oh, the economy's going to collapse. Oh, nobody will be able to get loans. Oh, you won't be able to use your credit card. Oh, my God, my God, my God.
Mushroom cloud.
Mushroom cloud, that too.
How about somebody asking the Pentagon for the missing $2.3 trillion? That I know that McKinney brought up at one time at an open hearing, and asked him, say, "Why? If you can find that money, maybe we can take care of this thing."
Now, Alan.
Huh?
Alan, come on now. You're not supposed to mention that stuff. Come on. That's just liberal claptrap. There's no missing $2.3 trillion. Who told you that? Where'd you hear that? Did you hear that on that Tom Hartman program or Randy Rose? Where'd you hear that?
I heard it in a live taping of a congressional hearing.
Oh, really?
Yes! Because somebody had the nerve enough, Cynthia McKinney had the nerve to actually ask him to his face on TV camera. You can see it on YouTube. Just put in Rumsfeld and McKinney, and it shows up.
Yeah. Well, anyway,
have you ever seen that, by the way? It's quite a challenge.
No, but she used to be my member of Congress.
Your congressman, yeah. Well, she asked him directly about the money. He said, can you have those papers on my desk next week? I asked for them a while ago.
Yeah.
How come? And not one other person in Congress has ever brought that topic up again.
And I'm sure, Alan, they never showed up. Hey, listen, I got to leave there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. Mike is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Okay. Just a couple of clarifications here. First off, this is not a bailout.
Right.
It's a cover-up of white-collar crime that goes back as far as 30 years. You know, it's taken us this long. It's taken us 30 years to prove indestructible fact that the Treasury Department of the United States of America is the country's market maker of last resort.
Mm-hmm.
All of the pull yourself up by your bootstraps, your faith-based solutions, your drowned government in the bathtub, all out the window. And Democrats in America need to take this indestructible fact and rub it in their face, till hell freezes over. These people, it's sad it's taken this long, but this is a symptom when you have so much of a concentration of capital. And you got to ask this, you got to ask yourself, why do you need the money right now?
Sure.
I mean, how does one spend $10 billion a day accurately? I mean, it can't be done. This is just throwing money at the problem. I don't have it. It does nothing to contribute or restore integrity to the financial markets, not to mention our political system.
Right.
And it doesn't jumpstart the economy. It does nothing. It just buys. It's kind of a taxpayer surge to get us through to the election, and then watch out. It's shameful. It is so shameful. But once again, the Treasury Secretary, the Department of Treasury, is the market maker of last resort, not the Federal Reserve, not Congress. I mean, they've all fallen down on the job, and look at how they've all passed the book. Bush, Congress, everybody's passed it. The Treasury Secretary, where have they been for 30 years?
Laying in the weeds, waiting for this glorious moment.
Shameful.
Yeah, it is shameful. And I think you're right, Mike. It is a cover-up. It's not a bailout. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you checking in. Mario is calling from L.A., listening on KTLK. Hey, Mario.
Hi.
Hi.
Is this Mike?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, absolutely.
If this thing is passed, the Constitution will be eroded because the president and Henry Paulson alone will have total control of all the money in the U.S. Treasury.
Everything. The control of
no
everything.
No oversight.
That's right.
And Senator Chris Dodd, chairman of the Banking Committee, who was a key player in all this, said that the deal will go through. It just needs a little changes to the deal before they give them the money. And I'm a Marine Corps veteran from the Vietnam era. And I agree with General Wesley Clark when he said just because Senator McCain was a POW doesn't make him qualified to be the commander-in-chief.
That's right. That's
and
right.
And definitely doesn't make him qualified to handle all of our money and run this country.
No, and further, Mario, I think that Wesley Clark should have gone one step further and really explained what it was that John McCain did during his time in the Vietnam conflict and whether or not that qualifies him to be a hero. Thanks, Mario. I appreciate you checking in, pal. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden, talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider.
Hard out here for a pimp. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, and the occasional added spice from Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. The executive producer of this program is Catherine Bay. Carol emails in, she's reading, Mike, I'm reading The Shock Doctrine while we're living it. And I subscribe to Naomi Klein's newsletter. She mentioned that there's a march on Wall Street planned for Thursday, September 25th at 4 p.m. That's the day after tomorrow. People can meet at the southern end of Bowling Green Park in the plaza area. Maybe you can mention this on your show. Yeah, Thursday, this coming day after tomorrow, September 25th, 4 p.m., meet at the southern end of Bowling Green Park in the plaza area if you live in the New York City area.
How much does that cost?
Nothing. It's not run by the Bush crime family.
Does it remind you, Paulson, of you know, Mom, can I have some money? Just $1 trillion. Don't ask me why I need it. Just yeah. I just need some money. I need to buy some stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Only this is getting terrible. Jim is calling from St. Louis, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program. Hey, Jim. Okay, let's put Jim on hold, and we'll try someone else. Roger is calling from L.A., listening on KTLK. Welcome to the program, Roger.
Hi.
Hey, Roger.
Yes, Mike. The Paulson, yeah, he's like, Mom, give me $1 trillion right now. You have to give it to me. Otherwise, I will take it to myself. No, this Paulson is like a bully. You know, he has been wrong all the way. Now he's saying the system is broke. But, you know, the system has been broke like 2-3 years ago. He didn't try to fix it then.
No.
And then 3-4 months ago, he was saying everything is fine. Lehman Brothers is fine. Bear and Stern is fine. Everything is fine. So this guy has been wrong all the time. So how do you know that right now when he says this is broke and we want the money right now, otherwise it's everything, all hell will broke loose. It's how we know it's he's talking correctly.
Well, if you look at his record, as you are trying to do, it is easy to see that this man is wrong on everything, and you're absolutely right. Why should anyone pay any attention to him in the House or the Senate? Now, the sad fact is that these senators and these members of the House are going to pay attention to him because, A, most of them are complicit. Almost every single member of the House and the Senate have taken money from these financial predators, including John McCain and Barack Obama. Including everybody. Everybody in the House and the Senate. I can't think. Maybe Dennis Kucinich has not taken money from them. But they're all on the payroll of these financial services companies. So what we are seeing in these hearings, we saw it today and we'll see it tomorrow in the House, is posturing, lies, deception on the part of the members of the House and the Senate. These senators, these representatives, They are as corrupt as Henry Paulson. They're just not on the level of corruption. All these House members and senators have to say, if they were really sincere about ending this predation on the American taxpayer, all they have to say is, get out of my sight, get out of this chamber, go away, you made your bed, sleep in it. It's what a person's mother has told them, you know, you made your bed, sleep in it. Or they could say, lay down with dogs, get up with fleas. Or they could say, you're known by the company you keep. But what they could say, I swear to God, what they should say is, get out of my Senate chamber. I've got real business to do. Get out of my House committee hearing room. I've got business to do. Go back to Wall Street and play with each other. Get out of town. Go away. Sink. Crash. Burn. Go to hell. We'll get through this. Go to hell. You want $700 billion, and you want it right now, and you want no oversight, and you write into the agreement that any decision made will be your decision. The money will go where you say it'll go. And already, these predatory bastards on Wall Street are lining up so they can administer these funds and take a fee. Can you believe this? Can you believe this? The very companies who have raped and pillaged are now willing to make the ultimate sacrifice. They'll suspend their normal business and handle the administering of these enormous amounts of money. Of course, you know, we need our VIG. We need our 3%. We need our 4%, our 5%, whatever it is. But we'll help out. After all, we're the ones that did this. We know where the bodies are. We know who to go after and who to leave alone. So go get the money, Henry. Cover our ass, Bernanke. Sit there with your mouth shut, Christopher Cox. Meanwhile, back here on Wall Street, we're waiting. $700 billion, son of a bitch. We didn't get the Social Security Trust Fund, but maybe we can get this. So what are the House and the Senate members going to do? They're going to sit there and ask the little tough-ass questions. And they're going to pretend and play make-believe. Oh, we need some oversight. Oh, we need some regulation. Oh, we need this. Yeah, all right, yeah, okay. And you and I both know what's going to happen ultimately. Right? Well, maybe not. Let's see what happens tomorrow when the same gruesome threesome sits on their asses in front of the House Banking and Oversight or Committee or whatever the hell it's called. That'll be fun, won't it? I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.